Please, the House Committee on Revenue will come to order for May 8th, 2007. Committee members, what I'd like to do first is to make a couple of announcements, if I may. The Vice Chairs and I met with Paul Werner the other day and looked at bills that are coming from other committees. We have a large number of bills that come from the Vets Committee, and I've asked Representative Boquist and Representative Reed to head up a work group to look at those bills for us, and we'll consider later then which ones are and how many and under what circumstances we'll actually hear those bills. I would also like to announce that the House Revenue Committee will be meeting with the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee on Tuesday, May 15th, to receive the economic and revenue forecast. The meeting starts at 8:45 in this room that morning. I will warn the members of the committee and the audience that given the press of business, we will in all likelihood also meet at 1 o'clock for other business in the afternoon that day, as we do regularly. Committee, I would also note that the question was asked on House Bill 3048, the impact of changes to the corporate kicker estimate based changing the base from the current year to the prior year, and our economist has prepared a schedule that shows what the differences would have been with the bill and with the current law, and I think we'd commend that to your attention. It's also in your materials for today. And with that, I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 69. Mazin, you're up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. Senate Bill 69 comes to you from your counterpart on the Senate side, the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. Went through there at that time, and Senate Bill 69, what it attempts to do in a nutshell is try to change or repeal the statute 461.055, and what this statute does is puts in law the requirement for the state lottery to have an emergency database center or a backup database center in Burns. It seems like there has been discussions, agreements, and new technology that brings this issue into your consideration at that time to repeal that requirement. And with that, Mr. Chair, there is really no revenue impact on the lottery or on the general fund of from that change, and the fiscal office have also issued the fiscal that is at this time undetermined because they don't see, according to the office, the immediate savings or reductions in budgets, but they say if that happens, then those reductions and expenditures will occur.
Thank you. We'll hear now from Dale Penn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dale Penn. I'm director of the Oregon Lottery. We have proposed Senate Bill 69 to remove the legislative mandate that the Oregon Lottery maintain a computer backup center within 10 miles of the city of Burns. This statute was passed about 13 years ago, and it assisted in bringing fiber through Burns and assisted in that process. During that period of time, we have continued to maintain a building which we partially own or share the ownership with DAS. DAS was attempting to do some archiving computer work at the Burns Center, have two employees there. But at this time, the reason that this statute needs to be changed is that technology has changed dramatically. And at the present time, we are ready to sign a contract in about 3 weeks that will be a 7-year contract for our traditional computer system for Megabucks, Powerball, tickets, those types of traditional games. And we can have a disaster recovery backup center in the regional IT center of our vendor basically for no charge. You can see from the fiscal impact for us that it presently costs us over close to $300,000 a biennium, and that cost is going up to close to $500,000 a biennium, primarily fiber charges for us. And this is, we are doing no work at this facility. This is just to have the capability to drive over to Burns if there is a catastrophe in Salem, and after about 3 weeks of time, reinitiate computer business for the lottery. By being able to go to the backup center for a vendor, we will be actually in the IT resource center for that vendor. We can be operational almost instantaneously and reselling games in Oregon. So a lot of flexibility, huge cost savings for us, much more functional for the capability. Now, so the bill is very simple, and it just would remove that requirement for us to maintain that backup center. The issue that comes up from time to time really is a secondary issue. Then what is the state going to do with this building? And for the last several years, DAS, who is half owner, Lottery, who is half owner, and the Burns Paiute Tribe, together with some people who comprise WADA Corporation, which is attempting to purchase the computer center, have been meeting and talking about that issue. On the Senate side, Judge Steve Grasty, from Harney County appeared and testified in support of Senate Bill 69, and Kenton Dick, who is a representative of the Burns Paiute Tribe, also came to the Senate and testified in support of Senate Bill 69. They then talked about their plans for trying to purchase the center from DAS and from Lottery, and we have had our first meeting to discuss that purchase as far as a price. We think all of the other issues have been dealt with, and so the last remaining issue is price, and we have another meeting should happen in the next few weeks. That process is moving along fine. And so with that, that's the reason for the bill. It will greatly increase our functionality, our flexibility, our capability to be functioning if there is a natural disaster in the Salem area, and also save money, which ultimately could be transferred then to the legislature for the purposes in the Lottery Act. So that's the reason for the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions if I could.
Yes, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's an obvious conflict of interest I have here. This facility is in House District 60 in Burns, Oregon. Dale, thank you very much for your testimony. I understand that the building is presently for sale, and WADA, a corporation with the tribe and local government, are attempting to negotiate. If you pull out before those negotiations culminate, won't that affect the value of the building?
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, the lottery has made a commitment to be a tenant until January of 2009. It's going to require us some transition time. Assuming that we can sign the contract next month, there still is transition time to do that. I picked that date in January. Probably we could be out next summer, but we were trying to give ourselves enough time, but also to provide some base for the Burns Tribe in purchasing the building so that they would have some tenant present. And so that was my thinking.
Follow-up question, if I may.
Yes, please.
Dale, do you have a contract for the present point of presence in the building right now with the fiber optic?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, the state does have a contract that is administered by DAS. We are probably the primary state user of that, but there are other individuals, and I think that this, that DAS has also is currently in negotiations on the contract because it is up next December. They're wanting to continue that, and I think they've made a commitment to WADA Corporation and the Burns Tribe that the tribe will be able to buy bandwidth on that fiber connection into the future.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I do have a concern. I would like an opportunity to just be able to meet. I don't see Lindsey Ball here today representing DAS, but I would like an opportunity to meet with Lindsey Ball and Dale as well as someone from LFO to make sure that I've got a grave concern about this. If you pull out too soon, the difference in value of that being a warm site versus being a dark site probably is at least 50% of the value. And my concern is if you pull out too quickly, and while I have no objection to sustaining the requests of WADA, the Burns Paiute, and Harney County leadership, my concern is that if you pull out too quickly that we could lose 50% of our investment virtually overnight. So, Mr. Chair, while we're in a public hearing, my request is that I be given an opportunity to meet with these folks, including Department of Administrative Services and LFO, to find out some of the fiscal issues that could affect the resulting sale.
Mr. Chair, if I might, and Representative Butler, this has been a process that's been going on for several years, and we've had meetings and discussed this in the past. And it is very important for a timing purpose that this bill move forward on a timely manner, because I'm at the point of signing a 7-year contract with 3 option years, and I need to do that in the next couple of weeks. I'm more than happy, though, to meet as a work group, and I really see this as 2 separate things. Removing the requirement that lottery must be there, I have committed publicly and privately that we will be there, and I say that today, until January of 2009. We are prepared to sign a lease to commemorate that. We've been prepared to do that for the last year, really. But I'm more than happy to work on a work group for the sale. The issue there is that our dollars are constitutionally dedicated, and so we must make an attempt to have a reasonable actual value. We cannot just give away lottery proceeds, but we're more than happy to do that. The difficulty I have is I need to have this bill move forward so that I'm in a position that I can sign this contract, or I get into real difficult problems about being able to consummate the request for bids and the bid process that we've gone through.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would say this to Dale, if I can get Lindsay's attention as well as somebody from LFO, my first 2 morning appointments are not yet taken up for the rest of this week. So, see you bright and early.
The one at 4:30?
5:30.
5:30.
5 and 5:30.
Thank you. Representative Witt, you may negotiate on the time. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Penn, can you give us some kind of idea of how much it cost the state of Oregon to build and equip the facility over in Burns, the building itself, bringing in the fiber optic cables and all associated costs?
Mr. Chair and Representative Witt, I can tell you that the lottery used somewhere in excess of $600,000. That's half of the construction costs. DAS was unable to front that kind of that amount of cash, and so they sold COPs to pay for their part, and I think they still owe somewhere around $350,000 on those COPs. Those will have to be paid off for the state to be able to sell this property. The issue of the cable was done by private enterprise, and I couldn't tell you what agencies were involved in that, but I do believe the success of this statute was that it required the state to be in Burns, so it provided a base tenant so that private business was encouraged to send their fiber through Burns. So it has accomplished that purpose. But we pay somewhere in excess of $250,000 a biennium for fiber charges, and you can see that our costs are actually going to go up into the future, because if I cannot utilize in my base contract of my vendor to have that be my backup center, the vendor is actually going to charge me dollars to support the Burns operation as a backup center. That's why that cost has escalated in the following biennium. So there's significant dollars that have flowed out there. DAS has run an archiving operation there. They do have two employees there, and they still operate that. They plan on consolidating that enterprise in their Salem data center that was just completed. But the lottery's position, we have never had people there, and it's not a daily operation. It is only a location that we could go to if we had to in the sense of a catastrophe here in Salem.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wett.
In the past 13 years, how much has that facility appreciated over initial costs?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wett, we did have an appraisal in this process last November. And there are different values assigned to that appraisal. The lowest value was if the center was classified as a dark facility, not operational as a business, and that was approximately $1 million. The highest value, which I am going to say I think is unrealistic, was as an operating business enterprise, somewhere in excess of $3 million. We were attempting in the negotiation with the Burns tribe to focus on the $1 million, in effect, dark site value, and that's what we've been working with.
Mr. Chairman, yes, follow-up. And if my recollection serves me correctly, in part that facility was located in the Burns area to bring about economic development in the local economy. Realizing that you're not from economic development, do we have any sense of what types of economic development and how much money that's brought to the local economy in the past 13 years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt, I think that you would have to at this point say it was not a success for economic development. It did bring two state jobs to the Burns area, and there are still two people in those positions. It did not attract the business that it was hoped to do, and it has not become, as a state government enterprise, a viable business. I know that is the Burns tribe's goal, is to turn it into a viable business and private enterprise and use of grants that are available to them, and so that's their vision.
Thank you, Mr. Penn. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Broome.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was primarily answered by Commissioner Penn, which is how many jobs are we losing, if any, if this system goes away? I don't want to make a comment after hearing the answer to that. I don't want to make a comment that, following up on Representative Wood's question, that the highest best use for economic development may be the next step, and it looks like it's not this one. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on Senate Bill 69? Not seeing anyone, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 69. Committee, this bill is not ready to work yet. Representative Butler has some things he'd like to do and is forming a small work group to work on it. So we will reschedule. We'll reschedule.
Yes, we will, yeah. Mr. Chair, I won't take any time longer than is absolutely necessary to meet with Mr. Penn.
But this won't be ready tomorrow.
No, sir. I haven't made any arrangements.
So we will not be working it today. We will reschedule the work session for a later time. And with that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 69 open a work session on Senate Bill, House Bill 3046. Mary?
Oh,
there you are. Okay, go ahead.
Real quick. 3046 creates a property tax exemption for property used by a natural gas pipeline extension project, including later additions and improvements. However, there's an amendment which deletes that phrase and inserts a specific number of miles, which was considered an important change based on the discussion. And basically, it restricts this exemption to the one company, the Northwest Natural Gas Company, which operates the pipeline at no profit, and it does so. It's owned by Coos County, and it was one of those pipelines that was one of those exemptions that did not cover when a different bill was passed previously.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Note the dash two amendments. Mr. Bauer, did you want to add anything to this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. Just we did try to limit this to accommodate the concerns of the committee. The mileage in there is to allow Coos County to build to Bandon. I will admit there's a little bit of a cushion in there, probably maybe 10 miles, because it depends on routing, whether they bring it in on one side of the city or the other. So it's designed to kind of stop and limit it at that point. I did have a question from one member about construction or use to California. I don't know how you'd get it to California, and this bill does limit it to ownership by the county, so it has to be the county's pipeline. That helps.
Thank you. Representative Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gary, it's my understanding that the Dash 2 amendment before us, going back to the bill under Section 1 on lines 5 and 6, the concern that had been expressed by the department was there, including any later additions and improvements to the pipeline. We couldn't use in the amendment the name of the city of Bandon, and we couldn't use the bond covenants Coos County had sold the bonds under, which indicated the line would eventually be taken to Bandon. That's why you've fallen upon the 115 miles plus or minus 10 miles to the Bandon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, that's correct. Legislative Council tried a number of routes and or alternatives, and we finally settled on it had to be mileage. You couldn't name any other way of defining it.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary, is there any way that a potential future pipeline for liquefied natural gas could benefit from this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, it's my understanding that the project that's being discussed for an LNG liquefied natural gas facility at Coos Bay would require a pipeline of between 24 and 36 miles or 36 inches in diameter. This pipeline is 12 inches in diameter, so economically it would have I just don't think it works. And I think they did look at that at one point. And 12 inches just is not capable of taking any kind of volume of gas out of the area.
Okay, thank you, Representative Witt. Anything else?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
It was John Phillips who had the concern about the language, including any later additions and improvements to the pipeline. I just wanted to make certain that that this overcomes any of the Department of Revenue and the property taxation issues that the department may have had.
Thank you. I did get a head nod, but I'm happy to get it on the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips of the Oregon Department of Revenue. Thank you, Chair and Representative Butler, for the question. And we did meet with Legislative Council, Mr. Bauer and his counsel, and all we were concerned about was knowing what it was that was exempt, and I think this does it.
Excellent. So now the issue was for you was clarity.
Yes.
And you have that now.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anything else for these witnesses? What's the committee's pleasure?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I move the Dash 2 amendments dated May 7th to House Bill 3046.
Representative Butler has moved the Dash 2 amendments. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Without objection, the Dash 2 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I move House Bill 3046 as amended with the Dash 2 amendments to the floor of the House of Representatives with a due pass amendment, the due pass motion recommendation.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 3046 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Belzer.
Aye.
Yes.
Representative
Green.
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Chair
Barnhart. Aye. This bill has received a unanimous vote, and therefore will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'll raise my usual question. should this one go on the consent calendar?
I would think so, Mr. Chair.
I don't see anybody objecting, so we'll put it on the consent calendar. Thank you, committee. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3046. Thank you, Mary. Mm-hmm. We will open a work session on House Bill 2294. Chris? Oh, there he is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2294 makes some changes to the tax credit relating to fish screening and bypass devices. You have before you two documents. One are the Dash A3 amendments. And despite the seven-page length of the amendments, all they do is add a sunset date to the credit. And how that is done is in Section 2A, it repeals 315.138, which is the credit. Section 2B defines the repeal effective January 2nd, 2014. And then Sections 13 and 14 are modified language that currently contain references to ORS 315.138. And so they're in here, and they remove those references effective January 2nd, 2014. Section 15 on page 7 is what actually makes those two sections operative on January 2nd, 2014. The bulk of the length there is just related statutes and references. And then on page 7, line 14, that amendment makes the changes in the bill effective for tax years January 1, 2008 through January 1, 2014. So that's the reason for the length of the amendments. And so that was a concern last time. The other document you have in front of you is entitled Proposed Metrics for House Bill 2294A. And this is pertaining to the rules that you adopted at the beginning of the session. And these are some of the metrics proposed by Fish and Wildlife, things that they would measure that would go into the following the purpose statement. And this information would make its way into the tax expenditure report.
Thank you. Is there anyone here for the department? Could you come forward, please? Okay. Are there questions about the proposed matrix?
I have a couple. That's why I ask.
Thank you. Would you state your name?
For the record, Roy Elker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you. Do we have a method of determining the value or the number or the something about what these screens actually do in terms of protecting fish? These matrix are all related to the fish screens themselves, rather than to the purpose of them, which I presume is to keep the fish in the stream and out of the fields.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I have an email with our suggested metrics is, but I don't have the document that actually length. If I could, it's the same three. Okay, all right. So your question, Chair Barnhart, is can we not measure the number of fish that are saved?
Well, or something, some way of determining value, or the number of fish, or some other way of actually getting at what I assume is the point of doing this exercise is to keep the fish out of the field and keep them in the stream.
Mr. Chair, that's a very, very difficult and costly thing to do, measure the number of fish that are, in fact, not going down a diversion. How fish screening is set up is that we have criteria for what a fish screen, how it performs when it's in place, and how water flows through it, and how much velocity of the water is going through it versus on the screen itself. So we have extensively worked with NOAA Fisheries to adopt this performance criteria. And so once performance criteria, we're using a screen that meets that performance criteria, trying to set up some kind of underwater camera system or otherwise trying to figure out how many fish are not going, that would be a very difficult thing to do. So therefore, that's why we don't have anything that we have brought forward that would try and actually measure numbers of fish.
Yeah. Let me attack it a slightly different
sure.
way. The interest of this committee in a bill like this really has to do with the cost sharing aspects of it, the tax, the credit. Are there ways that we would be able to compare under the current credit? I take it the activity is declining. Is that right? That in fact we're doing less fish screening, or there's more problems with it under the way the credit is currently working?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not sure I would agree with that assumption that we're doing less work. I don't think that's the fact.
All right. Then I think one of the questions that I should probably have asked last time is, what would be the point of making these changes in the rule? In what way are they going to benefit the state of Oregon for the money that it puts into the credit?
Well, I think if the question, and I'm not sure I understand, but if the question is, in particular, why are we making some modifications to the program?
Correct.
Essentially because the program has grown quite a bit from its original statutory back in the pilot program in 91 and down 95. And so the statutes there reflect a very small program with a small amount of state money going into it, and that program has grown quite a bit larger, probably by four or five times now the number of state money that goes into the program. And so because the program's not really designed in rule, which allows the commission to make modifications to a program which would normally happen for an agency, because it was actually placed in statute, that's why we came back to legislature after extensive public involvement and laid out some proposed modifications to the program, again in statute, because that's originally how the program was created.
Well, I find it interesting, and maybe we went through all of this before and I simply have forgotten. We have a fiscal impact that says that the revenue impact, indicating that we have a minimal revenue impact, and I'm assuming that's accurate, and yet we're increasing the number of diversions and increasing and making several other changes.
If I could, Chair Barnard.
I'm sorry, I simply misread that.
Okay.
Thank you. I think that's helpful. And that's the end of my questions. So did I prompt any questions from other members? Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, not necessarily in the form of a question, but I did want to thank Mr. Ellicker and the ODF&W and their staff who have gotten back with the folks along the Powder River. The Powder River had a project probably which is second to none in the state of Oregon relative to the fact that they have put fish screens to work and have kept the fish in the Powder River and out of the fields. And, Mr. Chair, you've obviously seen a fish in the field. There are very few people that have seen a fish in the field during irrigation season, it used to just tickle me no end to chase down the irrigation row for a sucker that had gotten through our lift pump. So that's very interesting to know that someone else has seen a fish in the field before. But we were lifting up out of a creek as opposed to an actual screening operation, which still is a benefit to this. But I did want to thank Roy and the ODF&W. Very extensive ongoing communications with the people who are on the ground, who are putting these systems in, who have been very successful in keeping fish out of the field, but have expended a ton of dough, as you well know. I've seen some of those systems up on the Rainbow Ranch, and those are stainless steel systems. very, very expensive, but very, very, very effective in keeping the water flowing at full pace down the creek and still being able to divert water out, which is absolutely free from fish, and having the screening mechanism keeping debris out of the fields and keeping the debris out of the river, too. I mean, this has just been very effective. So I just wanted to take this moment to thank Roy and the ODF&W for, and that's what's happened in the interim while we've, since we've last heard this bill, Mr. Chair, is that I'd ask them to please be in touch with those folks to see if they were, because they have used this so much as an opportunity to make sure that we can have these free-flowing streams and still be able to draw good irrigation water out for those fields. So thank you, Roy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Butler, thank you very much for that compliment. I will pass it on to our staff. We try very hard to work directly with folks in the field and address their problems and try and keep their costs down. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. May I add my compliments to that, those proposed by Representative Butler. I think it's very important that we continue working on these kinds of important programs. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
There are other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, we're in work session.
We are.
And I would propose, I would make a motion that the A3 amendment dated May 4th of 2007 be appended to House Bill 2294.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the A3 amendment. Is there a discussion? Is there any objection? Without objection, the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2294 as amended with the A3 amendments appended today to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 2294 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended today. Discussion. Please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. Yes.
Aye.
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 Aye. Again, this bill passes unanimously and will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Is there any objection to putting this on the consent calendar?
Yes. I think Representative Butler could speak to this. I'm volunteering. He understands.
You're volunteering, yeah.
I don't think this would go. I think this would have.
I would be delighted.
Representative Butler will carry the bill. Thank you, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Representative Butler.
I'm looking to Roy Elliker for.
I can't wait to see his description of the fish in the field on the floor.
You know, no fooling. Down the irrigated pasture, you got green grass growing where the cows have been working them, and there's a white fish or something like that. They're a sucker, and you're saying. This is a keeper. He's over 8 inches, and we can take him home and fix dinner now.
That would be a violation of law.
It probably would.
That's a good taste.
And before I lose complete control of the committee, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2294 and open a work session on House Bill 2961. I note, committee, that we have received word that the subsequent referral on this bill has been removed. The bill is not quite ready to work today, but I see that Jonathan is here in case members of the committee have questions. Does anyone have questions for him before he comes up? I thought there were a couple of questions in our conversation before the meeting.
Yes, my specific question, Mr. Chair, was whether under the provisions of House Bill 2007, whether domestic partnerships would be included in this?
I think that's a great question.
Yeah.
Would you identify yourself for the record and then...
Sure. Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, my name is Jonathan Manton. I'm the legislative assistant for Senator Przanski. And I contacted Legislative Council about that very question, and they informed me that Section 9 of House Bill 2007 is a catch-all provision that would cover the fees related to this bill so that... with the passage of that bill and this bill passes, then that fee would apply to the dissolution of domestic partnerships as well.
Thank you. Were there other questions for him?
So, Mr. Chair, I wonder if that changes the some of the
revenue.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
I guess this one, that probably wasn't anticipated when this was calculated.
Representative Rosenbaum, yeah, the estimate is based on petitions from 2005, and that's where the numbers come from the Judicial Department. And during in 2005, there were 36,500, and 64% of those paid that $10 fee. So that number is assumed to stay relatively constant, but I would be happy to see if there's any different thinking with the passage of 2007.
When you think simply about the passage of time, 2007 passed a couple of days ago, is being signed tomorrow, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The first contracts under that bill will not happen until the bill goes into effect. I'm not sure when that is.
January 2008.
It would be astounding if it produced very much revenue for Disillusions by the end of by the end of July, or the end of June 2009. If it did, we might have some splaining to do. That's just simply an observation. I have no idea whether it's real or not. Other questions? Representative Butler.
Yes, just one for Jonathan. Jonathan, originally the fee was $3. Why was the what was it amended up to the from the $3 to the $10?
Chair Barnhart and Representative Butler, I might actually bring up the professor from the University of Oregon Law School, Merle Weiner, who can, if that's okay with the chair.
Yes, please.
To speak exactly to that. The short answer is essentially that was an amount of revenue that was deemed more appropriate to provide some degree of funding for the program at the University of Oregon Law School, as well as the other two programs in the state, at the other two law schools at Lewis and Clark and Willamette.
This was a broadening, part of the broadening of the bill, was
and
it not?
Yes, sir, and just Chair Barnhart. I think Professor Weiner can speak to the kind of discrepancy we had and when we initially calculated how much money the program would raise at $3 based on the number of divorces, and I think she can speak to that.
Please.
So when we...
would you identify yourself for the record?
Sure. Thank you. My name is Merle Weiner, and I'm a professor at the University of Oregon School of Law. When we initially formulated this bill and proposed the $3 fee, we were estimating, based upon really very loose numbers, that it would generate about $75,000 a year, and that was barely adequate really to keep the clinic doors open. Our budget is far higher than that, but it was enough to keep us kind of stable. We realized in reformulating the bill that it was wise to really make these funds available to the other two law schools as well. That way we could increase the lawyers trained around the state who would be able to serve victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. So we also learned more information about the non-collection rates, which were far higher than we thought on the fees at 64%, and as well as the number of filings. So we came back with a $10 fee, and it's estimated now that the bill would generate about $200,000 a year, less than 2007 through 2009, a little more in 2011. And if you kind of do divide that among the law schools, that's back to $67,000 per clinic. So it's really back to where we were about starting when we had proposed the $3 fee. And at that rate, I have to tell you, it's going to keep our doors open, but we're still going to be out asking philanthropists and others to help support us. So it's not, that's the bare minimum we need to keep our doors open.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The 64% that pay, that leaves 36% that don't pay. If I ran a business like that, I wouldn't stay in business long. Is it a voluntary assessment?
Well, Representative Butler, there's actually a Supreme Court decision that says that if you're indigent and you can't access the courts because of the fee, then the state can't impose that fee. So I think that probably explains. I don't know what percentage of that explains, but I would imagine it's a large percentage of that.
If I understand it, the court is actually responsible for when a person asks to have a fee waived, to determine that the person can't pay it, and then the court orders that the fee be
That's
waived.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. So they've gone through the process.
I see. Thank you very much for that explanation.
Thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much. We appreciate your coming. The bill is not quite ready to work, so we're going to hold the work session over until tomorrow.
Okay.
And with that, we're going to close the work session now.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the last item on our agenda is House Bill 3044, and we will open the work session on House Bill 3044. Mary again.
Okay. Mr. Chair, House Bill 3044 has an amendment today, clarifying language, but the bill increases the current rate component of the forest products harvest tax designated for fire suppression to 62.5 cents per thousand board feet of harvested timber, increases assessment imposed on owners of timber and grazing lands for the purpose of fire protection. And in the original bill, it takes effect 91 days after signed die. The amendments will clarify certain aspects of the bill, namely that contiguous lots owned by an owner that has made application for fire protection services under Section 2 of the bill shall be treated as one lot with respect to the $47 rate, that will be imposed on a lot, even if it's contiguous. And it also clarifies in Section 3 that a lot on which a single-family dwelling has been placed may be treated as a combined lot for the purposes of that fee if it does not exceed 20 acres. And it changes the effective date to July 1, 2008.
And the effective date before was?
Signed by 91 days.
Oh, 91 days. Okay. So it actually moves it to the next fire season.
Cool.
Okay. Great. Colleagues.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
It appears that we had some excellent testimony on this in the latter part of April, that the folks were that came forward on behalf of the woodlot owners and the Oregon Forest Products Industry Council supported it. I'm assuming that they still support it with the extension of the dates to July of 2008. Therefore, we're in work session. I would move the dash one amendments dated May 7th, 2007 on House Bill 3044.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the dash one amendments. Representative Gelser.
Yes, I support the dash one amendments. I requested that they be written in part. The sections regarding the contiguous lots are an issue that was raised in an area of the state that includes Representative Olson's district and my own as the forest fire protection assessment has expanded and new properties have been brought in. And this will really create some more equity among property owners who have properties that are broken up into multiple lots but are currently paying that $47 on each lot, even though they might only live in one home. So I appreciate the opportunity to include this language from a separate bill in this bill. It will make a difference to some small landowners.
Thank you very much. Other comments on the dash one? Is there any objection to the dash one? Seeing none, the dash one is adopted. Representative Gelser?
Yes.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3044 with the dash one amendments be moved to the House floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves House Bill 3044 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative
Berger. Aye.
Representative
Berger. Aye.
Representative
Yes.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Again, we have a situation in which the bill passes unanimously and therefore goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there anyone who would like to carry the bill? Representative Gelser.
Carry this bill.
Representative Gelser, thank you. Representative Gelser will carry the bill, and with that, we close the work session on House Bill 3044. And committee, we obviously didn't schedule enough work for today. We have a lot of work for this committee to do, but we have an hour that you now have for other business, and with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.